Let's go to the phone line, a.k.a. Zoom line, and find out who we have behind door number two. Look at that. Joe Sinnott with Whitting Partners. How are you doing today, sir?
I am doing fine today, Jason. How about yourself?
Hey, not too bad. That's as lively and as game show-ish as we're going to get here on a Monday morning. See, we try to liven it up on a Monday morning, don't we?
Oh, Monday morning. But it's not just any Monday morning. It's a super Monday morning on the heels of last night's American quasi-holiday there, of course.
You know, let's talk a little bit about that. We, of course, don't have anything planned except for this time slot that we scheduled for an interview. We didn't actually exchange any notes what we were going to talk about. Boy, that's what you call taking for granted a interview relationship, I tell you. So let's talk about, number one, Monday mornings, and number two, the Super Bowl, because your podcast that you do, The Energy Detox, does such a great job of tying in current events from Bob Saget's death to the Olympics to the anniversary of Billy Mays. I mean, all kinds of, I mean, sometimes you stretch a little bit, but damn it, that's why we love it. So let's talk about the Super Bowl and what we can learn from last night's Super Bowl, if you wouldn't mind, sir.
Oh, lessons from the Super Bowl. Well, as you just said, there was no prep here, but if we want to jump right into lessons from the Super Bowl, I think it's important to remember when the Super Bowl occurs the day before Valentine's Day that, you know, you prepare that the two kind of butt up against each other. So, you know, if you're going to invest some time sitting on the couch and having an adult beverage or something during the Super Bowl, you know, just be mindful that the next day maybe you might want to flip that script if the next day happens to be Valentine's Day. So
I'll tell you what, I do not know off the top of my head if we go backwards or forwards in days, but I know that it's every 4 years, the presidential and summer Olympics is leap year. So either we're going to go forward or backwards, but either way, now that we've got the 17 game schedule in the playoffs in the NFL, my guess is we're going to have some Valentine's Days and Super Bowl that are going to have a nexus. They're going to meet one day, and that is going to cause some problems. So let's bring this to leadership in the boardroom here. Do you think that was discussed? Do you think somebody said, hey, in 2025, we're going to have, now I need to look it up, but you understand the question from an existential leadership standpoint, don't you, sir?
I think I do, and I think that, yeah, there could have been some intentionality there if the powers that be that know that they're secure with their billion-dollar Super Bowl event, if they wanted to make sure that those who are profiting from the what I'm guessing is also a billion-dollar day of love and candy and cards and everything else. Yeah, if they were in cahoots to say, hey, look, we make the most powerful, attractive Super Bowl we can, and then on the next day, or again, maybe a couple days later, or as you said, maybe on the same day, we make sure that people are spending just as much on their loved ones for Valentine's Day to offset whatever the time and more importantly, attention they've devoted to the Super Bowl. So, Jason, yes, I don't think I would put it past a conscious leader who's looking to pad his bottom line and the bottom line of his industry to say, hey, look, maybe we can align these things a little bit and see if it could be a bit of a win-win. That's an interesting conspiracy theory for Foil Hat Monday here on your show.
Well, it's not so much a conspiracy theory, but in 2027, Sunday, February 14th. So if we continue on this trend with the Super Bowl, where it's now going to be a week later than what we're used to because of the 17-game schedule, in 2027, Sunday, February 14th, we'll have the Super Bowl and Valentine's Day on the same day. Now, we get that in Minnesota up here all the time with Mother's Day and the fishing opener. We get that battle all the time. But Super Bowl and Valentine's Day, that might create a whole new chemistry set and alchemy of emotions and divorce attorneys and et cetera. Who knows, man?
Yeah, and I mean, if we thought that, you know, prior halftime shows were over-sexualized, just imagine what they're going to pull out in 2027. So, yeah, all kinds of stuff to look forward to 5 years from now, I suppose.
That's something else. But there you go, folks. There's your Monday morning lesson that the Super Bowl itself now in 2027, if we continue on, we'll have a Valentine's Day Super Bowl. And that would be a first where you've got the most masculine of sports meeting the most feminine of holidays. Bum, bum, bum. And we're going to track that story the whole time right here. Joe Sinnott and Jason Spies. Okay, let's get to something that people care about. All right, so what's going on in your world, by the way?
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here in Pittsburgh, as is usually the case, and, you know, what do we got, 18 degrees, burning plenty of natural gas, and we're also in the midst of earnings season, so... You know, in our neck of the woods, that's the story. Is we still got plenty of gas here. We're still producing it responsibly and cheaply. And you know, we got a couple CEOs here in our neck of the woods that are very proud of what we're doing. And you know, that's probably been the biggest story from an energy standpoint here locally. Is you know, CEOs are not being bashful about the fact that hey, look, we're here in southwestern Pennsylvania. We got a great asset. We got a great thing going. And boy, some of those folks in, you know, northeastern United States would kill for, you know, reliable, plentiful, cheap energy that we got right here. So that's at least the latest from an energy industry update in this neck of the woods, Jason.
Are you guys having any power outages or, you know, that sort of thing out there?
No, we've been clicking along here pretty good, knock on wood. Haven't had too much bad weather. So there were some power outages. Last storm we had, whenever that was, a week and a half ago. But no, all in all, it's a fairly typical winter. Yeah. We're, like I said, we're in the teens this morning. I think we're going to be hitting 60 in a couple days. So that's February here in Pittsburgh.
Up here in the Dakotas and the Minn-Kotas and Mondak-Otas, which is the North and South Dakota, Montana, and Minnesota. They kind of lump us all together, since our population equals that of Minneapolis. It's actually probably true. You take out Minneapolis out of those four states and combine them together, and that's about equal. What we worry about is the ice rain. When, you know, it's not so much the snow and the cold, because we're pretty prepared for that, but it's when the ice rain comes, it snaps the power lines. And so I remember back in my radio days, man, there were some families, they would go 2 months without power in the wintertime if we'd get an ice storm, because some of those roads you can't get to, and some of those rural areas are so remote. So we get daily updates, and those people are more prepared than you could, you know, you or me or anybody else, man. They should be teaching classes on sustainability right now. Anyway, there, sorry to sidebar there for a second, but one of the things I did want to ask you about was redirecting energy, which is somebody like me who can easily veer off the path. You know, the blue car drives by and pretty soon my attention's gone. But also you got, you know, the Super Bowl and the Olympics, or you got the new, you know, the new Netflix premiere, whatever that might be, Ozark, that's out. So that's the old water cooler talk at the office. Well, now, you know, I mean, you got this hybrid of people going to the office, except for not really at the office, unless the office is like the office. So you've got a weird combination of I don't know, is it group hat texting talk or something? Either way, you still have the momentum. And so the manager's job, the leader's job, is still to direct energy and the directions of their employees, where they're focusing their attention, where they're focusing their focus, if you will. How do you do that on a Monday after the Super Bowl? Because, man, that's a tough thing in today's world, especially in the TikTok day and age.
You're right. It is not easy. And in this age where, you know, in an office setting, you used to be able to sense that energy. You can sense the, you know, I mean, literally, you can hear what's going on around you. So, yeah, that is challenging in a remote setting and when people might be, not 100% focused first thing. And again, Jason, it all comes back to taking the time to ask a question. And there's many different forms to ask a question to get the other person going, right? I mean, if I shot you a text this morning or an email or Slack message or, again, whatever means of communication I wanted to use, if I asked you a simple question, an intentional question, not a cliche, you know, how's it going, but if I said, hey, did you enjoy the halftime show last night? And I get you going, you know, that leads to energy, right? You know, break away from the storm, you know, standard cliche, and certainly, you know, do something, though. Ask a question. It's the most basic human thing you can do. And because we have so many different mechanisms for doing that, even when we can't just walk to somebody's office or cube or whatever, take the time to ask somebody a question and get them thinking and going. And then, boom, you've got a connection between the two of you, and that's going to generate energy. So again, it's the same basic things you would have been doing, say, in an office setting when you were in person, and you can have the water cooler chat about Super Bowl, halftime show, whatever. But you know, just because you're not there in person doesn't mean you can't engage somebody and then see where it goes. So that's it. It's not, again, it's not complicated, but it's the same thing I do day in and day out as a coach. I'm asking questions, Jason. It's not complicated, but it gets things flowing. It gets things moving. You get some momentum. You get the other person thinking. And then that's the key, right? Especially if you're a leader. You want to get the other people thinking. You want to get the other people's juices flowing. You want to get them energized so that they can come up with good ideas and move forward and be innovative and do all those things. And as cliche as it sounds, it could all start with a simple question. So there's your Monday morning tip. Ask a question of somebody, of a couple people on your team. Get them going, get them thinking, get them energized.
Curiosity question for me and anyone who is curious like me. Do you know how a lot of these managers are corralling the hybrid worker when you got some that show up to the office and some that are staying home? And, you know, it's all on computer and it's all cloud-based and a lot of it's Zoom-based and a lot of different things. But I'm hearing everything from, you know, there's an online punch clock, essentially, via Zoom. Everybody's got to check in to a Zoom meeting by a certain time, and that's no different than the, you know, the online punch card. Is that what it's called, punch card? What do they call it? Punch clock. That's what they called it back in the old assembly line days. Flintstone days, right? The put your piece of granite into the dinosaur and he chomps on it, and that's what time it tells you it's at. So maybe that's a symbolic for that methodology, because I'm hearing other things too where, geez, some people have shaved it down to three and a half, four days a week that their employer's okay with. I mean, their Fridays, their half-day Fridays are now turning into full-day off Fridays and things like that. So anyway, are you hearing anything out there? This is all anecdotal stuff, unless you have commissioned a study I'm not aware of.
I've not commissioned a study, so most of what I would share would be, yeah, firsthand observations or anecdotal. And what I would say is that, by and large, companies are not, at least, again, the ones I'm engaging with, are not going down the path of timesheets and clocking in and all of that. It's more, hey, look, the results speak for themselves. You get your job done. Again, you're communicating. And a lot of companies now have moved towards, again, Slack channels or Salesforce or other mechanisms of communication. So people kind of know what folks are working on. But you get your work done in a shorter amount of time and you do it at 3 a.m, you know, great. And I think by and large, those companies are healthier. They're better off. Their teams are better off when people aren't micromanaging. And I'll say too, Jason, I think that's also a part of me being focused on the energy industry, because that's the nature of the energy industry, right? I mean, we're there to get a job done. We're not just there to twiddle our thumbs for 8 hours or 12 hours if you're, you know, sitting on a rig. I mean, there's times where maybe you find yourself doing that, but, you know, by and large, we have a goal to accomplish.
I was going to say, speak for yourself, pal. Some of us are there for that, okay? Excuse me, sir, I'm here for the thumb-twiddling job. If only life was that honest.
Yeah. But at least, you know, again, if you're somebody who says, hey, you know, but not only did I thumb-twiddle, but I figured out that, you know, when I go forward-twiddling versus reverse-twiddling, you know, I am much more efficient. And, you know, on the next tower that I'm going to be working, I'm going to do some more experimenting. I'm going to see if everybody else is better as a forward-twiddler than a reverse-twiddler. So, you know, again, going back to keeping your mind going, staying energized, asking questions. I can ask you a dumb question about, again, which way do you twiddle your thumbs, forward or backwards? You don't know where that could lead, Jason. So we are off on a tangent here. But anyway, the moral of the story is this is not an industry that lends itself to, clocking time when you don't have to. Obviously, there's logistical, legal reasons to do so for hourly employees and all of the fun HR stuff that you need to abide by. But, for many leaders, for many of the, you know, the Zoom, those who can Zoom and work remotely and some of those white collar jobs where if you're not punching a clock, then it's based on the work that you're doing, not just sitting around. So fortunately, I see more of that approach than, you know, worrying about, hey, did he get his 40 hours in this week or not?
You just gave me another business idea. Tangent. That's a good name for a bar. Tangent, because people are always going off on a tangent. So, all right, go to the bar. That's the tangent.
Well, and
right?
There's there is certainly a deep meaning in the oil and gas industry in terms of directional drilling and, you know, drilling a tangent section of a wellbore. So if you plop one of those there in different parts of the oil patch, you might not only have a nice, clever bar in your hand, but you might have a franchise opportunity for all the various areas of the country that we serve. So there you go. I like it. When you're looking for that first investor, you give me a call, Jason. We'll chat.
Well, I didn't do too well with my cigarette shop idea called the Main Drag. That one just didn't work as well, you know. We tried it the trans community too. That didn't work at all. So, anyways, that's a different topic for a different time.
Well, no, I think it's a related topic, Jason. I think again, there's a drilling related thing. You know, drag is key. Torque and drag when you're drilling a well, you know, can make or break how successful you are. So, I think you just weren't marketing to the right group, and you didn't layer in enough oil and gas analogies. I mean, that's. You know, my business is based on oil and gas analogies and marrying in that specific focus area and that group with, you know, traditional leadership ideas. And I think the key there would have been marrying the cigarette shop to the oil and gas industry. And, you know, you might have had a different outcome to that business, Jason.
So I guess you're one of those guys that no matter what you do, you just take a step back and you say, okay, and you repeat it. And then you just add drill, baby, drill at the end. And if it works, all right, move ahead. If it doesn't work, how do we make it work? Anyway.
I'm not necessarily going to argue with your characterization there, but.
Yeah, well, I that was the first stereotypical thing I could think of. And she did a great job of that, actually. And I still hear that today and see it in social media posts and everything else. That is a topic I would like to revisit with you at a later date is we're starting a story right now on social media policies in the workplace. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. You know, a different time to have you actually kind of, you know, research it for yourself a little bit and dive in a little bit on your own product and your own personal social media policy that you have. And if your company has one written down in a business plan or not and that sort of thing. Because I honestly, I think that is coming in the next wave of either through sustainability reports, corporate sustainability reports, or this ESG movement, or either the government or something along those lines, especially with more and more people working from home. I just see it coming, if not already here. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think some companies already are investing time and energy and money and bringing in outside folks to come in and talk about social media. You know, you might think that that's something that's more geared towards, you know, high school students or middle school students these days. But, you know, it's amazing what, you know, an hour and a half short course or speaker, you know, talking about social media, talking about the implications, sharing some anecdotes. You know, it's amazing how that could just, you know, be enough to reframe how people think, you know, reframe what the purpose of social media or what their purpose is in diving into social media is. And, you know, it might prevent them from putting something out there that is, you know, cancelable, if you will, or, you know, could lead to harm for themselves as an individual or the company. And again, it's under the same umbrella of risk that companies have been very familiar with forever and have been pumping plenty of money into forever. So, yeah, some companies already, Jason, are being proactive when it comes to bringing in outside folks to do it, but to do it in a way that doesn't seem purely self-serving, right? I mean, clearly a company does not want the liability of having somebody go out there and, you know, even if the opinions are supposed to be their own, you know, somehow, coming across as representing the company and leading to all kinds of trouble. But, you know, when companies make these investments and it's also to help that individual as a person or to in turn help their family, I'll tell you what, there's a lot more buy-in. And that's true of safety. That's true of other things that I've been a part of, you know, being part of the oil and gas industry, where so much of that investment that companies make and training and all these other things, it is applicable at home. And quite frankly, you know, it's one of the things that I continue to lean on today. You know, I'm not working directly for an oil and gas company anymore, but man, I'll tell you, my family, my wife, and now my kids, I mean, they have heard so much from a safety standpoint and from a driver safety standpoint because of what was delivered to me and the value that I extracted from that investment that companies made. So, yeah, happy to go into more details from a social media standpoint, but from a high-level standpoint, Jason, again, companies, they make investments, right? They make investments in wellness. They make investments in all these other things. Why wouldn't they make an investment in helping people avoid the dangers, if you will, of social media? And on the flip side, you know, maximize its value and its potential.
What is your background in oil and gas, by the way?
So 3 years out of school as a field engineer working for Schlumberger offshore in the Gulf of Mexico on the drilling side, and then came up to Pittsburgh in 2008 and began working for what ultimately became the largest natural gas producer in the United States, EQT. And with them, had a number of different engineering roles to begin with. So reserves development engineer, drilling engineer, completion engineer, managed the completion engineering side, reserves engineering, and then kind of expanded and moved into a little bit more from a forecasting standpoint, planning standpoint, still weaving together a lot of those technical things and leading lots of technical teams, but ultimately moving into, again, a little bit more on the strategy side, if you will, and then finishing up my last year at EQT, standing up a data governance and analytics team that brought together a lot of the different data governance and analytics efforts that were going on in the company and kind of brought them under one roof, if you will, before my time came to an end. And I decided to move into the world of leadership coaching, but again, still focused on the oil and gas industry. So chemical engineer by degree, a lot of engineering related roles, but have since decided to marry that with the world of leadership development and coaching and training and, you know, bring that background, the insight, the experience together and help out folks who are kind of going through their own career journey right now, Jason.
And that's the next question I was going to ask you. And I know we're getting a little bit long on time, and I do apologize, and I do appreciate your time because I know how important you are and talking to big, important CEOs and executives and all kinds of different things. But that's one of the things I appreciate about what you bring is that knowledge back here to the crude life. So let's share a little bit of that, if you wouldn't mind. What are people saying right now as they are navigating through these real uncharted waters? Are they making it okay? Do they have to keep going back to their banker? Are they going to guys like you and just tweaking a little bit of maybe some emotional things or logistical, what's the right word I'm looking for? You know, that intangible logistics. There we go. Intangible logistics. We always make up a word or a phrase, man.
Maybe that's why we're having all these supply chain issues, is that they're focused on intangible logistics and not real logistics here. Maybe we'll see a shift in the supply chain issues if we move to tangible stuff. I guess the answer to that, Jason, it's important to note that I kind of serve two different worlds. So the one world is the individual who would be reaching out for support of some sort. And then there's more of the corporate side of things where there's corporate coaching and it's more of a corporate sponsored thing. So, you know, typically there's two different goals for those two different subsets. They're certainly overlapping goals, but for the individual, Jason, yeah, a lot of folks who are coming to me and you know, reaching out to coaches and looking for either advice or guidance or whatever, they feel stuck. I mean, that's the word that I hear more often than not, is stuck. And some people are stuck in a very good, high-paying job that, you know, might be very demanding. And again, they don't want to leave it, clearly, because, again, it pays well. It's paying the bills. They're not having to go to their banker. They're not having to take out loans. But they feel stuck because they know that it's deteriorating them in some way, shape, or form. It's holding them back in other areas. And then, of course, there's another area of folks that are stuck, and they are, you know, maybe in more dire straits from a financial standpoint, and, you know, they're in between jobs. But again, they're looking for momentum. They're looking for the logistical items to get moving. But to your point, you know, you can Google the best way to put together a resume and find a new job. So honestly, I think you may have hit the nail on the head with the intangible logistics, which are first and foremost figuring out, you know, what it is that you actually want to do. And not just, again, in cliche terms, but, you know, what is your ultimate purpose? Not just to get a job, but, you know, why do you want a job? Why do you need to pay bills? Why do you need to do these things? And really going down that path so that they can get moving. So again, it is about logistics. Whereas on the corporate side, Jason, typically, companies recognize that, again, you're compensating individual leaders within a company. You're compensating them well. You want to get the most bang for your buck, if you will, from them and the teams that they're leading. And so in many cases, corporations, again, want to make sure that those individuals can keep moving forward. Sometimes it's a de-risking thing, like you talked about with social media, where you want to make sure that a given individual doesn't burn out or doesn't go off the deep end. But more, you know, more common is being again, proactive and making sure, hey, look, we got a good thing going. We have a lot of talent. How can we maximize that talent? How can we optimize that individual and his or her team so that they can keep going, so that they don't get stuck, and so that they don't ultimately wind up, you know, costing the company that hidden money, that intangible money, if you will. Because, again, it doesn't take much, Jason. If you have a leader who starts to kind of slip into a rut, again, even if he or she isn't completely stuck, and if they are hurting the engagement of their team and in terms of the whole company, and you're paying these people big bucks, well, you can imagine the dollar figures, how quickly it adds up if, you know, even 5 or 10% of your workforce is disengaged. And again, the numbers are staggering. I mean, some of these numbers are like 60% of a given workforce is disengaged. But even just a couple percentage points, when you're paying people, you know, six figures, high six figures in some cases, it doesn't take a whole lot for companies to realize that, man, we're leaving a lot of money on the table if we can't give people the tools to keep moving forward, to be conscious about what they're doing, how they're communicating, how they're leading to disengagement. And again, on the positive side, if we're not giving people the tools to extract the most potential from the workforce that, you know, they've paid for, and that they've spent a lot of time and energy putting in place. So again, a bit of a long-winded answer there, because again, I am serving sort of two different goals, but ultimately, again, it comes down to individuals and companies not wanting to get stuck and wanting to get moving and taking care of some of the logistical barriers that can make moving forward difficult.
All right, so how are you making money here? I don't want you to get into your business plan, but let's talk about your services, because you mentioned individual. You also mentioned, you know, the corporate side of things. And, you know, really, honestly, what you're talking about is the day and age that we're living in, which is the last 20 years, a lot of this big data is coming to fruition. And now that we got $15 trillion more dollars put out into the marketplace, that is really supposed to go to a lot of the thought workers in the intangible marketplace, because the proof is there. All the way, the industrial forest keeps amazing me. It absolutely keeps amazing me. We've got a meeting scheduled with a group out of Minnesota where we're going to plant a forest, right? And what caught their attention, get this, because, you know, with the Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd and just the whole police reform vibe happening, you know, ground zero in Minnesota, that trees lower crime. There's actual data out there that proves that trees lower crime. So we've got a whole new kind of a marketing campaign or vein or strategy, or we call them pop-up parks, where we're going to be doing some new kind of parks, basically, for some communities. And it's based on the fact that trees lower crime. Can you believe such a thing? So, Joe, what do you think of that, man? How's that for a weird backdoor plug into your kind of business, huh?
Well, I think it underscores the fact that, you know, everything is connected. You know, again, we're not getting metaphysical or anything, but I mean, it is all connected, right? I mean, it might be 2, 3, 4 degrees of connection, but the planting of trees and connection to crime, the, you know, effectiveness of a leader's communication skills and the effectiveness of their workforce or the turnover rate. To your point, that data is there. It's clear. So the beauty of it is from an ROI standpoint, you know, coaching is proven. There's very little question that, you know, a dollar invested in coaching leads to multiple dollars of value. So that's the good thing. I didn't have to spend time when I shifted into this proving why coaching works. What I did need to do is make it very clear why my unique blend of coaching is matched to the oil and gas industry and why it is different, why it's, you know, supported by a different background than a lot of coaches. And again, why I chose to continue focusing on the oil and gas industry and why that matters. And the reason that it matters for a couple of reasons. One is that it builds trust, right? You know, the people that I work with in this industry, it's not that they have trust issues, but it's a heck of a lot easier to gain the trust of somebody when you know what they're talking about, when you're speaking their language. And because of that, you can get results faster. And the other thing about this industry is that, again, I mean, it is about as volatile as you could possibly get. And that volatility, those ups and downs, costs real money. So, again, to your point, Jason, we have the data to show how much money that costs, you know, from an industry standpoint, from a global standpoint. But in terms of how we attack that and how we extract that value, or how do we minimize the loss of money for these companies, for me at least, it comes down to typically 12-month engagements. So over the course of 12 months, Jason, whether I'm working with an individual or with a group of individuals within a company, it starts with the same first couple steps, and that is one, having conversations with other stakeholders who engage with those leaders who I'll be coaching to find out what's, you know, really going on, right? I mean, what the real challenges are, what the real opportunities are from somebody who is unbiased, and they're talking to somebody like me who's independent and who isn't in-house. You know, I'm not a spouse dealing with, you know, an individual, and I'm not working for HR when I'm dealing with a company. You know, I'm independent, and I'm able to extract from other people, all right, you know, what are the challenges? What are the opportunities? What are the weak points? You know, this is under the guise of 360-degree conversations that you might hear about. And that forms the basis so that you can measure progress over that 12 months. Because coming back to your point, Jason, you know, data is all based on obviously having baselines and then being able to measure against it. So in terms of what I offer, that first step is establishing a baseline so that we can measure it. And from there, over the course of 12 months, it's lots of individual conversations. When I'm doing group coaching, there's also group coaching training that dives into specific topics, whether they're related to communication, whether they're related to, you know, strategy, whether they're related to analyzing data, you know, figurative data sometimes. What do we say? The intangible data, the metaphysical data. And, you know, we'll dive into specific topics, but it's all under the guise of, all right, what is your ultimate goal? What are the challenges, you know, that present themselves that you need to either solve or move around? And over the course of 12 months, as we solve those challenges and as we get people unstuck, then again, you can measure the progress, not just because the individual I'm coaching says, hey, I'm doing a great job, Joe, I feel really good, but because other people see that, other people feel that energy, which we talked about at the outset, right? They can see how that energy is leading to better results and how, again, when you're dealing with a leader, how those results have second, third, fourth degree impacts on the bottom line. So the key is it's not a one-stop shop, or I shouldn't say it's not a quick fix, right? It's 12 months. It takes time so that you can actually amass that data, Jason, see that data and understand how those results impact the bottom line of a company or of an individual who, again, is looking for something new or to maximize their potential.
So Jerome Bettis, the bus, had that patented grin in the Super Bowl commercial he had last night. Did you get a chance to catch that?
I did. Yes, the infectious grin of Jerome Bettis, pride of Pittsburgh here, pride of Notre Dame, my alma mater, and soon to be his alma mater. He did not graduate, but I don't know if you saw, he decided to go back to school. So in, 3 months now, he will graduate. He will officially be an alumnus of Notre Dame, although I think, you know, plenty of people would have been happy to confer an honorary degree on him for what he's represented since he left Notre Dame. But yes, I did see him there, and what a guy, what a great representative for the area, and he's got some, you know, connections here to the energy industry as well. So you know, just in case we needed another reason to love Jerome Bettis, he's got some connections here to our beloved industry.
Well, I was going to mention, not only are you and I both friends of his on social media, so we stay up to date with certain Jerome Bettis news, and I, of course, when I saw the commercial last night, I did. I've got a lot, by a lot, you know, more than six kind of celebrity friends on social media. So it's a little bit different when you see them, you know, on a national spotlight like that, to where, you know, you think, hey, I know that guy. All right, cool. Whatever. But for Bettis, though, what I see with him is he had to graduate. He wouldn't have accepted an honorary degree. He's a leader, and he actually gives a shit about being a leader. And, you know, his brother is, I think his brother's got a company in the energy industry. Is that right? Sand and gravel or something?
Yeah, it's the two of them together. I think his brother John might be, I think he might have more involvement, but it's Bettis Brothers, Sand and Gravel. So it is the two of them. And yeah, they do serve the oil and gas industry around here.
Yeah, anyway, so I just wanted to point that out as well, that, you know, he's got connections to the industry, but I know that you've got even more of ties to him, especially with the Notre Dame thing. But what do you make about that as we kind of wrap up here? And let's tie in Jerome Bettis a little bit. I truly think that that's why he is getting his degree, that he could get an honorary degree, but he looks at himself as a leader, and what a leader would do especially a leader in the African-American community, is to go get your education. And you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, and I think he's also been pretty upfront about the fact that he's doing it for his children. You know, he wants his children to see him do this. I mean, you could talk about the stakeholders that he has in the community at large, again, from, you know, various different communities that he's a part of, but I would imagine that two of his biggest stakeholders, of course, are his children. And he wants to show them, hey, look, you know, dad went back, dad did this, dad finished this. And yeah, absolutely. You know, he's doing it for the right reasons. And again, I think it's, you know, it can only be positive, right? I mean, people are more than happy to cast stones at anybody in any decision and, you know, talk about self-serving this or that. But at the end of the day, again, you look at that grin on the sidelines, that this guy is just enjoying life. He's doing what he thinks is best for him and all of those around him and all those who support him and watch him and look to him, whether on social media or on, you know, his weekly Steelers pre-game show there during the season. You know, whoever it is, he's got a lot of eyeballs on him. And, you know, he's just trying to do the right thing. And again, he's a great asset for our region and certainly beyond.
Yeah, he's got some great momentum going. Like you said, the education, and he's also...
literally and figuratively.
Yeah, the bus is moving, pal. I mean, he's got the golf event. He's got... I saw he's an ambassador spokesman for another great organization. You mentioned the children angle with the education. I mentioned the African-American angle with the education. The guy, it's like his career's just starting. That's the beauty, folks, is that you can always have a second, third, or fourth career. You just got to reinvent yourself and figure out what assets you have. You know, what assets have you got right now in life? And reinvent yourself. And you know what? If you start with Joe Sinnott with Winning Partners, he'll help you find those assets, the intangible and the tangible, because he understands both sides of things. How can people get in touch with you, sir?
Easiest way is wittingpartners.com, WITTING partners, or good old LinkedIn.